This is Marketplace Money from APM. It's so easy to get caught up in the holiday spirit, the parties, the presents, the paid vacation days, fun, fun, fun. But there's always work to be done when it comes to keeping our money in order. And once we cross over to the new year, well, tax time can come surprisingly fast. So don't let it catch you off guard. Be prepared. And if you have questions about your finances, now is the time to ask. And what do you know, listeners wrote in to us and did just that. And so we have some of them on the phone, and we have invited CBS Money Watch editor-at-large Jill Schlesinger to help them out with their personal finance challenges. Hi, Jill.
Great to be with you.
Are you ready to go to the phones?
Ready to rock.
Laurie from St. Paul, Minnesota. Laurie, how are you?
I'm just great. I wish my stocks were better, but that's the way it goes.
All right. So what can Jill help you with today?
I invested in one kind of a penny stock, and the other stock I have was a company that actually went bankrupt. And so when I look at my portfolio, these show up. And for example, the one stock, I have two shares that are now worth 0.001, okay? And the other one shows me 20 shares at 0.097.
Hold on a second. So the penny stock, is that the 0.097?
No, I wish it was. The penny stock was the 0.001.
Uh-huh.
It's like worth nothing.
Oh, my goodness. Now, can I ask a silly question? Because I know,
sure.
I don't want to go relive the past with you, but what made you do this?
Well, the original stock was a facial identity stock, and it was back right after 9/11, probably a few years after, and I really thought Face ID was something that would go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought 1,000 shares at 50 cents. A share.
Okay. Where are these two stocks held right now? In what kind of account?
At my broker.
Uh-huh.
It's an electronic broker.
Okay. So in your electronic brokerage account, if you hit sell right mm-hmm. now, what would happen?
You know, I have no clue.
Because that's what I would do.
Try to sell.
Yeah, I would absolutely sell them. And it doesn't matter what, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, you're like 0.097. You might worry, well, what if it goes up by 2 cents? Who cares?
Oh, I don't care.
Right? So first thing I would do is I would try to sell it. Okay? That's number one. I mean, look, if it's a company that has actually gone bankrupt, the deal is that you just deduct it based on, you know, 0.001, and the IRS will let you deduct this loss. So, I mean, I think I would, first of all, I would, number one, try to hit sell as quickly as possible. If for some reason you cannot sell them, then you may actually be forced to move these into an account where somebody specializes in penny stocks. But my guess is you can sell them. You may not like the execution price. You might end up with even a deeper loss than the $830 or so. Who cares? The
yeah.
good news is once you get over this moment in time, it's not that terrible. You're going to say, wait a minute. I've got to be crazy. Who would buy penny stocks? Who would buy individual stocks? You know, if I give you all the data in the world, you know, Apple notwithstanding, all the great Google notwithstanding, it is hard to pick winning stocks, and it's really hard to pick winning penny stocks. So I would steer clear of them, take your losses, move on. Pinky swear with me that you're not going to do this again.
Oh, no. This is my first foray.
And last.
And last, too. Laurie, I hope that helps you decide what to do, does it?
Yeah, it does, actually.
Well, all the best to you, and happy holidays.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Jill, we have another caller on the line. This is Kay from Fullerton, California. Hello, Kay.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a senior, a retiree, and I have a question about life insurance as an investment strategy.
Hmm.
I have some cash been sitting in the a bank doing very little, and then a broker who is affiliated with the bank approached me and said the life insurance is a good way to invest, and also the earning is substantial, and the most good part about it is the earning will be non-taxable. So he presented a real convincing case. However, you know, being a senior, always be cautious about being victimized. So I decided to call you folks for advice.
She made the right call, didn't she, Jill?
Boy, do I have a lot to say about this. Now, Kay, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm approaching 80.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so congratulations, first of all. There are a few bells and whistles that go off for someone like me. You know, I'm a certified financial planner. I was in the business of giving financial advice for 15 years. So first of all, it is so crazy to think that there are people in banks who hold themselves out as quote unquote investment advisors when they're really just salespeople. So the first thing I want to be really cautious about is for you to understand that when you go into a bank branch and they say, come talk to this investment guy, that person, that guy or gal, has actually no duty to tell you what's in your best interest. They don't have what is called the fiduciary duty. And so your big, huge yellow flag goes up right there. Okay. Number two, when I look at life insurance for people who are 80, first of all, this is usually, and I'm not going to say every single time, but I'm going to say, Tony, back me up here. Maybe 99 times out of 100, this is a bad idea. Because life insurance products, whether it's straight up life insurance or whether it is an annuity product, tend to be among the most expensive types of vehicles out there. So while you might get a better rate of return, you are paying for the privilege of getting that rate of return. And what I would caution you is that if you look at all the securities regulations, if you look at the SEC website, they have specific warnings against these types of behaviors. And unless somebody really needs life insurance, and at 80 years old, it would be hard for me to make a case that you need life insurance unless it's for some really crazy estate planning tool, I would avoid this like the plague. Tying your money up in insurance policy that is likely to cost you a lot of money, I think that is not advisable at this time.
Yeah, that's what my regular financial advisor said. But I said, well, it sounds good because it's a good way to pass it on to my grandchildren.
Right.
And also it's tax-free. And also it's going to be outside my estate.
Well, let me just be clear about one issue. The only way that life insurance proceeds pass outside of your estate is if they are held within an irrevocable life insurance trust. And that would mean that you'd have to go to a lawyer, establish a trust, have the trust buy the life insurance, and then it's outside of your estate. Otherwise, life insurance proceeds are added to your total gross estate.
I was told it is outside my estate.
No way. Life insurance proceeds pass to beneficiaries without income tax. Life insurance proceeds are always considered part of your gross estate unless the life insurance is owned by an irrevocable life insurance trust. And you would know whether you did that. You'd have to actually go to a lawyer, have the attorney draft, it's sometimes called an ILIT, I-L-I-T, draft the trust. The trust would then have to buy the life insurance policy. Then the proceeds are sheltered from the estate taxation. But you know what? If you have an estate that is under $1 million right now, you really don't have to worry about even if everything sunsets. What I think is probably going to happen with estate tax law is right now you have no tax due on the first $5 million of an estate. There's probably going to be some negotiation around that, maybe down to $3.5 million, $3 million. If it's under that amount, then this is just a sales hook that the banker slash broker is giving you to get you interested in the product.
Kay, I appreciate your call. Good luck with this and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your answer.
All right, let's go into our third caller. This is Daryl from Montpelier, Vermont. Hello, Daryl.
Hello.
What is your question for Jill today?
Well, my dad wants to get his grandchildren U.S. savings bonds, as he has in the past, and he's always gone to the bank, and he got the paper bonds, and they put them in an envelope, but that's not available anymore, apparently.
No, that's so interesting, because that just started actually the January 1st of this year. The Treasury Department basically says no go on paper bonds anymore, and everything is electronic. Is your dad a little wary of the electronic purchase of these bonds?
He is. He's definitely not a Luddite, but he's... Yeah, I think he's kind of mistrustful of something so ethereal.
Well, you know, one thing to remind him, and I know this is maybe might not get him over the hump, but in many ways, I would say that buying electronically is safer than the paper bonds because then nobody's going to lose the bond or tear the bond. But I understand that people get wigged out about this, right? You know, like, oh, I kind of wanted to do the paper thing, right? There is an alternative that he may want to consider, and that is instead of buying double e-bonds, he can switch over to i-bonds. Now, the thing with i-bonds is the only way you can buy them by paper is with an IRS tax refund. So if dad's due to get a refund, he can use the refund and actually buy I-bonds with that refund. How old are your kids?
It's two families. So the kids all range from age 3 to 17.
I mean, he could just very simply open up separate accounts for the kids and, you know, pop an index fund in there. You know, there's a couple of cautionary tales I have about that. You know, for a 17-year-old, I wouldn't necessarily want to put the money in the 17-year-old's name, right? Because then the kid can do whatever he or she wants with it when he turns the right age, 18 or 21. Or maybe he opens accounts where the kids have some interest in the account, but he's still the owner. The Coverdell IRA accounts are real. These are education savings accounts. If he's putting in, you know, $500 or something at a time, that can be a good way to do it. But I think that if you can get him over this hump and have him go to treasurydirect.gov and read about how secure that website is, it sounds like that actually may be a better alternative for him, especially if there's lots of different kinds of kids involved.
What chances do you think there are of getting your dad over his digital fear?
It's worth revisiting.
Daryl, our time is up, but I hope that you got some information that will be of use to you.
Most definitely.
Thank you very much for calling. And Jill, it was always great having you on and taking those callers today. Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large of CBSMoneyWatch.com. Thank you very much and have a happy holiday.
And happy holidays to you as well.